Hello, and welcome to the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. Many of you know that the past few weeks were a little bit rough as I dealt with my family and I having COVID-19. Thankfully, we are all currently healthy and looking forward to getting everything back to normal. The Walnut Grovecast spinoff, Wagon Talks, will have a new episode released next week, and I hope if you have an interesting coming on that you will reach out to me at Mark, M-E-R-K, at walnutgrovecast.com. And to those who have reached out already, I will be returning your messages in the next couple weeks to get you on the schedule. I would like to thank the following supporters for their continuous support: David Webb, Dana Wilkins, Chantel Dubois Nishiyama, Peyton England, Lydia, Stacey Corrigan, Elvira Dubas, Candy Gleason, Angie Zodava, Megan Eichner, Katie Bollinger, Rebecca Frederick, Angela Bowen from the Looking Back on My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast, a very fun podcast, Anne Quinn, Jill Stellman, Michelle Plug, Dottie Cashin, Suzanne Holland, Spunky Cheek, Leah Mitchell from the also very fun Retro TV podcast, Kim and Jack Lair, Chris Hassler from the always hilarious VHS Rewind podcast, Stacey Keller, Matt Mercier, Cheyenne Sanderson, Stephanie Carnes, Whitney Griggs, Kelly Milkey, Alicia, Rachel Boren, Dean Butler, Gerald Lang from the OSI Files podcast, which is all about the $6 million man, Ginny Comer, Ginny Schneider Mitchell, Jeff Griffin, Julia Monin, Laura Furman, Macon Parker, Melissa Gilbert, Teresa Trapp, Valerie Williams, The No Agenda Podcast, Full of Information, Sherry Benner, Susan King, Whitney, Julia Jin, Chris Cooling from the Super Informative Forgotten.tv podcast, Don Roberts, Max Duration, Aaron Wortman and Liz Serha, Brian S., and Bobby Young. Thank you all for your support. If you would like to support Walnut Grovecast, please visit patreon.com/walnutgrovecast. So without further delay, please enjoy the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. Walnut Grove is a place to be. If you're living in 1863, Walnut Grove was a place to be. If you're living in 1863. Hello, this is Mark, and you're listening to Walnut Grovecast. I have on tonight Chantel Dubois Nishiyama. I just like saying the whole name. I don't know. That's what it's all about. Welcome Greetings. Back to the show, Chantel. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're jumping from one thing right into this. You are a woman that cannot be stopped, and that's what Canada needs. My chair is squeaking like crazy, and I have to figure it out. But I'm not going to figure it out right now. I'm just going to complain about it. What are we talking about? What episode of Little House on the Prairie talking about tonight?
We're going to be talking about Faith Healer, which is when a revival show comes to town. A faith healer and the kind of guy who sets up a tent. And I think it's a really interesting, I think it is a bit of a trope in a lot of different TV series.
Yeah, and, I mean, this was the period of time to really be doing it. Do you have the? You know what? I don't have it in front of me. I cannot believe I'm sure I have it here. But when was this episode released?
Here, let me grab it.
So 1979. I see that much. I got it. November 19th, 1979. So about 41 years ago, almost exactly 41 years ago, and. You know, this was the period of time where, you know, that you had a lot of this, the born-again Christian movement really kind of boosting up and the popularity of televangelists. And maybe this is kind of where that came from. And I don't necessarily have an issue specifically with these movements. It's just the I do have an issue with the people who will take advantage. And it happened a lot.
Well, actually. And I think it's, you know, I think the interesting thing about the sort of faith healer type shows, because it's continued to be a trope in TV and stuff. I mean, notably for shows I watch, they did a healer show in The X-Files, which, you know, was 90s and it was contemporary.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, out of the possibility. And then the other show that did it that I really liked was Carnival.
Well, it was like a carnival that was based on basically the same period of time, right? Or is that in the early 20s?
It was actually the 1920s. And yeah. It was actually it got a lot of accolades for being a very accurate portrayal of what the 20s were really like. But there's one episode where they go to a town and they can't run the carnival. For whatever reason, it's like a dry town or that kind of thing. So to make money, because this is how they make money, is they decide to have a good old fashioned revival. Right. And Toby Huss is one of the actors who normally is the guy who runs the peep show and the girly show. And the burlesque show. Yes. And then he becomes the preacher. And it's just a fantastic performance.
No, I'm sorry, go on.
It's the same thing here with the guy playing the preacher and the faith healer. It's, you know, it takes a real kind of powerhouse of an actor to sort of portray this. I think
it's a bit of theatrics.
It is. And, you know, I think for anybody who comes from outside of an evangelical sort of tradition, I think the reason this keeps showing up in shows like popular shows is because it's fascinating to any of us who didn't grow up in that tradition. You know, it's.
Well, have you ever seen this type of stuff? Like, the big evangelistic things where, you know, people speaking in tongues and laying hands on and healing people and things like that.
Yeah, I have. I've followed different, anytime there's been like a documentary or something. I mean, right. it is fascinating to me. And of course, then, you know, that also goes along with like the snake handlers and people of that nature. And there's a lot of little breakoffs of this sort of evangelical, like way of life. But then one of the other things I follow kind of closely is the anti-MLM crowd. So the anti-multi-level marketing crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the biggest place where multi-level marketing comes out of is Utah, and it's largely linked
because
to the
of LDS or
yeah to the LDS. And there is, you know, I have
that means Latter-day Saints to people who
Latter-day
might not
Saint,
know.
Yeah. Yeah, Church of Jesus Christ
or Mormon, yeah,
yeah, Mormons. And so there is, you know, this tying in and there is some like comparison to like an evangelical religion, evangelical sort of sales, like it ties in because it's a group of people who are used to selling.
Go to church because you could walk in and Reverend Danford could be at the pulpit.
I don't know what I would do at like a at something like that was so rocking. Like it's
it is. It's pretty good. You know what? Everybody's talking about Reverend Danford. He's kind of a cool guy in a lot of ways, and it's all the buzz about the town. It's people haven't been this excited about somebody coming into town since, I don't know, the circus. I forgot his name. The guy had a cool name.
He did.
London. Yeah, London. Something what a London. Cool name.
It's a cool name.
But all right, here we are. We're at the sawmill of all places, and we're talking about religion. So here we are with Charles and Jonathan.
Some rigging's got there.
Yeah, that's a relief.
What do you mean?
Well, Harriet Olson ain't talked about nothing but the Reverend Danford since you heard him preaching last month. Now we'll find out what the fuss is all about.
Yeah, I suppose.
Well, Charles, you're going tonight, ain't you? You can't miss this.
I'm not going to miss it. I'm just thinking about getting this order filled right now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, work.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Jonathan. Chill.
I was going to pray for a whole new pair of suspenders or something.
I'm sure that's a valuable commodity back in those days.
But you know, Charles, you know, he's he's focused, but at the same time, it's kind of, I don't know, he's already questioning it.
Keep in mind, like,
he's a doubting Thomas.
So yes. Oh, look at you.
Yeah, I love that. I love that parables. Phrase.
See, and again, I would have been watching Little House on the Prairie. At the same time I had all these hippy-dippy teachers, I was watching, like, so church was only Catholics. Like, I was, you know, 5, 6 years old. I didn't know there was, I wasn't really versed in the religions of the world at that point. And so, you know, Charles was kind of, you know, the church on Little House was very, like, it's non-denominational and...
It's the best church in the world. Anybody can walk in, anybody can walk out, and there's no judgment, unless
so
it's Harriet.
It was tying in with this whole sort of Jesus Christ superstar image I had in my head, right?
Right, it's like a David and Goliath type thing.
And I want to point out the preacher's wagon is really nice.
It is. I think all in all, he's...
really went all out in that one. I really like it.
But, you know, we have some lemonade, and we're at Harry, and there are some clips here that are a little bit long, but I think that it's necessary to play some of them. So, all right, here we go. Let's find out what's going on here.
Thank you, sister, brother.
Oh, I wish you didn't have to rush off like this, Reverend Danforth. I'd love to fix you some sandwiches.
Well, you're very kind, but the sooner I begin preparing for tonight, the better.
You know, the best place for that tent would be in the field down from the feed and seed.
Ah, oh, just think. Folks will be coming in from all over to see you.
We'll come by with some neighbors to help you set up.
Oh, no need. My assistants will be arriving momentarily to take care of the details.
Oh, fine.
God bless you.
Oh. So he has a whole thing happening. I mean, everybody's kind of like, this guy is really together.
Yeah, and he's kind of a young preacher, too.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and Harriet, of course, you know.
Does she have borderline personality disorder? I swear to God, she falls in love with, like, every new guy that walks into town.
Well,
like,
anybody who's kind of cultured, she's in awe of.
Well, and the funny thing is, whenever I think of Harriet, my grandfather used to say about people who were kind of snobby that they think they're a little bit of shit on the end of a stick. And to me, that, like, sums up Harriet in... Because I don't think she's a bad person. I think she's just... I think the rest of her family has done really well. Because, you know, whenever we meet her other relatives, like her niece and doctor's lady, or what's the two-parter where the mother dies and the aunt's going to, like, the great aunt's going to adopt Alicia and then Grace. And you know what I'm saying, though?
Yes.
You know, and her posher relatives aren't like her. Mm-hmm. I think that she kind of struggled to find her place, and she married Nels, who moved out in the middle of the prairies. And, you know, yeah, they're posh for the neighborhood, right? But I mean, all things relative, right? Like, they would not be in a city, they would not be who they are in Walnut Grove.
I just wanted to point out, in the next scene, we're at the Ingalls, we're at the little house, and we get this shot of outside. And I don't know, I mean, this one, it's only there for a second, so I wouldn't expect everyone to kind of catch on this, but I'm at 3 minutes and 14 seconds in on this episode. And it's a shot of showing the wagon, and Bandit is asleep in the wagon.
Yeah, just sacked out in the seat.
Like, I've never seen this before. Like, it was like, what's going on here? It's very strange to me that... This dog, they're eating. You know, usually dogs are begging at the table trying to get at your scraps.
But, I wonder if it just happened that the dog climbed up there at some point and Landon was
what
like...
What a chill-out dog, right?
Like,
I mean...
film that. We'll use it. Like, it's good.
But this dog must be just so relaxed and, like, such a cool dog in real life. You know, just like a fun dog. I mean, can hang out with horses, no problem. It's hilarious. I don't know. Something about it I just really thought was hilarious. But... here we go. We have Reverend Alden having a little grub at the Ingalls house.
Carolyn, I appreciate your having me to dinner. It gets a little lonely with Anna away visiting her sister.
Our pleasure, Reverend. There's plenty more cake.
Perhaps another slice?
Mm-hmm.
I hear the mill's doing quite well, Charles.
As a matter of fact, we've got more business than we can handle, Reverend.
Well, that, as someone once said, is the kind of problem to have.
I agree.
Thank you.
Reverend Alden, are you going to hear that preacher tonight?
Well, I imagine I will. He's quite a remarkable evangelist, I'm told.
Can he really heal people like this, eh?
some individuals have that gift.
How long is this Reverend Danforth supposed to be here?
Well, I imagine it depends on how many people he attracts.
Well, it may sound selfish of me. I just hope that his meeting doesn't take away from our church services.
How could they? They're not even at the same time.
I know, but we have two services on one Sunday. I'm not so sure some of the folks may not choose one over the other.
Oh, my goodness. Look, she's, like, so concerned about this. Very strange. I mean, if anything, that should really be coming from Caroline more than Charles, I think. I mean, if any, he's also, he's saying, he's bringing up fears, right, that maybe they don't need to be brought up right now.
No, maybe. I think that Charles is, I mean, Charles and Caroline are actually quite bright for who they are in the time, right? Like, they both can read, which is ahead of, like, most people around them, right?
Right,
like,
right.
It's probably, like, them, the Reverend, the Doctor, the Olsons, and that's it.
Right, right.
Right? Like, I mean, so it's, you know, who knows what he's read, that something's twigging in his mind.
Yeah. Or, you know, he smells a scam going on, I think, a little bit.
Maybe it's because he's always like, it's funny, this is what he smells the scam on.
Maybe Albert took him aside. He's like, Pa, look, I know these kind of scams.
Because Albert is like, Albert's street smart, like in a crazy way. Like, he's just so, he's seen so much already compared to everyone else.
Speaking of Albert, he takes a little bit of the highlight here at the end of the scene. He kind of gets in on the conversation with the adults. So here it is.
Well, I confess that I thought it crossed my mind as well.
Oh, you don't have to worry about the people of Walnut Grove.
Actually,
you have a very loyal congregation.
Really? Because at some point later, no spoilers, there were 9 people there. 10 if you include Reverend Alden. So maybe you should, you know, don't count your eggs before they're hatched.
Well, not the whole flock, Carolyn. Otherwise, why would Mrs. Olson have invited the Reverend Danforth here in the first place?
She probably figures she needs more than one church service to get forgiveness for all the stuff she does.
Albert, your mother's right. Carolyn, this cake's delicious.
Thank you.
And that's classic Caroline, where she's like, she's not going to laugh, but sometimes we see her laugh. I'll play a moment of the preaching. We get a little bit of a taste of what to expect in these type of tented situations. And this is exactly the way it would happen, right? I mean, they would set up a tent and bring people in, and that's it.
And let me tell you something. Just down the street from me, in the summer, maybe not this summer, I don't know, but like, there is a revival tent that's set up at one of the churches down the road from me. So,
wow.
I live in a very ethnic part of town, so we've got a lot of, I think we've got a lot of people from like...
a Baptist type of background?
Like African countries where the Christianity is like really very, still very evangelical.
Okay. Well, so Baptist tends to be a little bit more of a, at least in New York, it'll lean towards more African Americans.
Yeah. I don't like, yeah. So I think that's why, like, I've never seen it anywhere else, but I mean,
interesting.
I've almost wanted to go.
Yeah, why not?
But it's like, I don't know. I don't know if I'd fit in. Like, but I kind of want to see these big choirs that all sing and they're so excited. And like,
you're a Christian. Of course you'll fit in.
I love the music, right? No. Like when you see these Baptist, like the Black Baptist churches, like I don't want to sound weird or I don't know where to stand anymore, but
I've said this story before on Walnut Grovecast is, you know, growing up, two of my closest friends, they're still Black, right? Except, you know, they lived, in Queens and like I live in Long Island and they live in Queens, you know, I live in Nassau, they live in Queens. And it's like, we only live like maybe a half a mile from each other, but it's like different school districts, different everything, you know? So I would spend, these are like, brothers of mine, like, you know, we're just like the closest that people can be. So it's like either they were at my house or I was at their house. And when I was at their house, whether I'm Jewish or not, on a Sunday morning, I have to go to church. You know, it doesn't matter. And I would literally be the only Caucasian person in this church. Literally. We're talking literally. And we're talking, the reverend's talking about like white people and the problems. And it's like, I'm just like, you know, I'm 12. Don't blame me. And, but there was no type of problem. So I say you just go. Because no, if anything, nobody gives two craps about it. People just want to see your face. They want to know that you're there. And if anything, you'll walk away just being really happy that you did it. And I've been in that situation. And aside from that one situation where they were talking about white people and it was getting a little heated, I was totally not uncomfortable.
That's cool. Yeah, it really is something I should do at one point, because I think it would just be really interesting to see.
Plus, it is your faith. You know, I mean, you have every right to be there. So I hope you do that. Report back.
I will, if we're ever allowed out of the house again.
There you go. That's another thing. But here's a little bit of a taste. By the way, I have this frozen. And in the opening credit, we see Almanza and we see Lucy Lee Flippin. Well, you know, Dean Butler and Lucy Lee Flippin. And I'm like, where are they? They're not in this. I see them now. They're in the audience.
Oh.
Because I was going to ask you, I'm like, did I miss it? Are they here and I just don't see it? But they are in the audience. They are not sitting with the Ingalls. I took a screenshot for proof. All right. But yeah, here's a little bit of a taste. You have the guy walking around with a type of thing to give tithes. I forget what it's, you know, like a contribution to the movement.
Collection plate.
Collection plate, exactly.
Yeah.
When you come to the Lord, let him decide who you are and what you're worth. It's time to come to the end of your search for a miracle, of your search for God. Because I believe, I know, I have seen that there is no pain.
So he goes on. You know, he's basically giving his presentation. There's a woman in a wheelchair. There's people. Everyone's, like, amazed. This is new for Warner Grove. And people have traveled, and there, I'd say it's a good, like, 50, 60 people in there, maybe even more.
Yeah, like, people have come in to see him. And, the fact that the Reverend's there, and, you know, I think there's a general interest. And I think the revivals, in some ways, are kind of like a top-up. They're actually meant to come through town and, like, top up your Christianity or whatever. Like, you know, it's not like you straight.
It's like a crusade, you know.
I think in those days, it was like a little extra.
It really is a show. He's up there. He's got a cross behind him that's just as tall as he is. He's got the curtain there and everything. Is just, you know, he's a good salesman. You know, good
and
snake.
It's beautifully
salesman.
Acted. Like he, you know, the actor who played this, obviously.
Yeah. Oh man, he's great.
I'm just trying to look up his name here. You know,
but I'm going to play
the right.
Yeah. I'm going to play his pitch. This is basically him reeling them in. This is how he basically closes the deal.
Hey! Who is willing to believe? Who among you will be the first to come forward and ask God for his divine healing?
Oh, please. Please, God, help me.
Help me, Lord.
I want to see again.
It is done. You need only come forward.
Oh, please. Please.
Come forward.
And everybody's looking like, what the hell is going on around here? Like, this is the most exciting thing we've ever seen. We have a more mature Laura. I see Alice back there too for the first time in this episode. Even baby Grace is looking forward. Like, what is going on? Everybody's just like, they're amazed by this. And he basically goes up there and he starts healing people. It's kind of incredible. What this really is called faith healing.
Yes.
These people tend to feel as though they've been given the gift from God. And please correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm catching any of this wrong, but God has anointed them with the power to heal. You know, so they're not healing anyone, but God is healing the people through them. They're using them as almost a channel. So that, you know, when they lay hands on people or when people speak in tongues. This is all you're being used as a vessel directly from God.
Correct.
Or Jesus, which is one in the same, right? It's, again, the Holy Trinity.
Yes.
You believe God loves you?
Yes.
Do you want God's love?
The woman's in a wheelchair, and it's just dramatic. We've never seen her before.
Oh, yes.
You have come to this place with the help of your wheelchair.
So, you know, it's doing the theatrics. It's basically getting people to kind of get into it. You know, it's like he's just, I hate to say, doing the gimmick in a way, but here's when he feels as though he has healed her and he's trying to convince her that she's healed.
Stand in the light of God's love.
I can't
stand.
I can't
stand before his holy presence. Thank you, Lord, for your boundless love.
And we get the close up on Reverend Holden's face, and he's like, "What? I'm going to be out of business in 2 hours. I can't do that."
And Doc Baker's just like every scientist right now, just like eyes rolling back in his head, like, oh my God, no.
I heard he went to go look at a farm after this.
Yeah. I'm super annoyed you didn't ask me to do to run and hide because it was a Baker episode, but it's okay.
Well,
I'll get over it.
I get a lot of people attack me all the time. It's like, well, I want to do that. We can always do them again.
I'm just kidding.
And over time, we can always go back. Always, you know. My favorite part of that episode is when Mary shows him how to do whatever he's doing with the horse.
Oh yeah, I love
cropping,
that,
yeah. Cropping.
Because he's just so hopeless, right?
Yeah, he's like, please show me. Please have this 14, 15-year-old girl show me how to do this. The next day, they have the conventional church service from Reverend Alden. And they're all coming out of it, and they seem happy.
Reverend, a lovely sermon.
Thank you, Carolyn.
It's a shame more people weren't here to hear it.
I don't think it was such a bad turnout, really.
You know, it'd be kind of funny if Charles goes, maybe you should consider investing in an organ. And maybe a bigger cross.
Oh, hey, that's something I wanted to mention. That music when she stands is so great. They've got those big concert bells in the background just ringing. Like, it was really beautiful. Scoring.
And even the way it stops, it's all very dramatic. It's just really crazy.
And I think maybe, like, that's what it must feel like.
Yeah, it is.
Right?
I mean,
if you've gone to something like that and you're actually... And then, of course, we know that crowds will react to one another, right? We know that crowd hysteria is a thing, but also crowd joy and... You know, people will react to what's going on around them. So I think they clinched that in the music a little bit in the performance.
100%. I mean, it's exactly it. It becomes a score for what's going on in real time. It's crazy. And it's an extremely emotional thing where you have to just kind of, you know, I don't want to say whether it's real or not. It's just, it's a very emotional.
Right?
Yeah.
Emotion is powerful.
It's a magical thing that is accomplished in real time. Right.
But getting back to this scene, what is Caroline doing? It's a shame that more people couldn't have come.
Yeah.
What was that?
Numbers are down. And that's what they're discussing. Like, yeah.
I suppose.
What was that? Yeah. It's like,
well, I've been thinking if Reverend Danforth gets a large attendance at his prayer meeting this afternoon, people are being served. That's what's important.
Will you take an early supper with us?
That's very kind of you, but no thanks. I have some things I need to attend to.
Like maybe indigestion from the meal from the other night, from last week. It's like the turkey just didn't really sit so well in my stomach. Speaking of stomach cramps, they're outside playing around, and Timothy, who we've never seen before, starts complaining that his stomach is hurting like the Dickens.
Right next to the world's saddest seesaw.
Yeah, it's really... I mean, paint it. Paint it with some of that purple paint. You know, do something.
Something.
It's my stomach again, Pa.
Timothy's been having stomach cramps lately, but nothing this bad.
Have you tried making poop? That's what I would say. So check this out. You know I'm in New York, right? And you know, you've heard of this coronavirus thing, right? My son went to school Tuesday, I think, and he had a stomach ache. So he went to the school nurse, and the nurse calls me up to come pick him up because he has a stomach ache. All right, and that's fine. You know, he came home, and he took a nap, woke up, jumped in the shower. I think he used the bathroom as well, and totally fine. You know, an hour after we came back home, he's totally fine. Well, now I have to go and bring him to a doctor physically, have him examined, and make sure that, you know, let the doctor determine if he needs a COVID test. And all because, like, the nurse didn't just say, why don't you just try going to the bathroom? You know, like, go and do this, you know?
It's, like, so weird. Like, don't they have an assessment that actually, like, we have to do assessments with the kids?
Like, I don't get it. Like, our doctor practically laughed us out of his office. He's like, this is ridiculous. And he couldn't return for 2 days. He went back today.
Yeah, but, like, our schools, you have to have very specific symptoms.
Yeah, he had one symptom, the stomach ache.
Yeah, and that isn't even one of them. Like, you have to have, like, the fever with the cough.
Well, she circled nausea. So it's like, that's really a stretch here. So, all the gossips of the town are calling me up on Tuesday night. Hey, how's he feeling?
And if it makes you feel any better, it's far better than the call I got from school this week, which is your son's on in-class suspension.
Oh, no. What did he do? Well, you don't have to
tell me. He was getting bullied, so he punched a kid. I mean, hey,
there you go.
Frankly, it's Laura Ingalls, management of bullies, and I'm kind of okay with it.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, kind of.
It's the Canadian way. I'm just kidding.
Just
but no, that's.
The kid, threw his gloves off, and it was, yeah. It was,
you know what?
It was on.
As a mom, you should be proud of that, and it sounds like you are.
I kind of am, yeah.
Yeah. Don't take crap. All right. You know, sometimes we all have to be a little bit more Laura than Mary.
Even though Mary sometimes, when she gets like her dander up, she could be pretty bad too.
I'm hitting on Ma, I don't want to be around Mary.
Oh, yeah. That was.
That God. Face. Bite
your
head off.
I would have gone with him over Charles any day.
Oh, Gil. All right. So here we go. Gassy Magoo over here. It's like, hey, I'm going to go take what is it called? A soda, a bicarbonate.
I think it is. Yeah.
Have a bicarbonate and go into the outhouse. Carrie's almost done.
All right. Let's get him in the
office. This kid's in pain. I mean, he's just like, oh man, I don't know what is going on. And of course, Dad is concerned. So the determination is this.
I can't be absolutely certain, mind you. But all the signs point to acute appendicitis. Now, he should be taken immediately to Mankato and examined by a surgeon.
To Mankato?
Yes, this isn't something that can wait, Matthew.
And this is where the danger aspect of faith can sometimes really introduce itself. And it's like you have to ask yourself, do I have faith in this or do I have faith in doctors? You know, like in a physical action.
Yeah.
You know, take the action or do nothing or hope, really.
And sort of like the modern interpretations from the Catholic Church is, you know, if God sees fit to give us scientists and doctors who know things and who study things and who spend their life studying it, then we should listen to them. Like, you know, they've been given these gifts to help us.
You can hope while you're, you know, at the doctor's office.
Interesting fact about Kevin Hagen is his grandfather was a doctor, and he used to go on house calls with his grandfather all the time when he was a kid.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a few interviews where he talked about how he pulled a lot of that, you know, because it was like they would absolutely go to like smaller places. And, you know, it was a time when doctors still did house calls and things like that. Right. So,
yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. So, he's at the office and he's basically going to say that he doesn't want to take Timothy, but I'll let him just kind of say it.
I'm going to give you the name of the doctor to see.
Look, Doc, Mankato's awful far and you're not even sure.
If you leave right away, you can be there by tonight.
Well, just hear me out. What I'm thinking is that in a little while that prayer meeting will be getting underway.
Prayer meeting?
Yeah, with the Reverend Danforth.
Reverend Danforth? Matthew, if your boy has appendicitis, Reverend Danforth isn't going to cure it.
But you've seen how it cured that woman, and...
An apparently crippled man. And a woman, a blind woman. Apparently cured by pure faith. Now, what I'm saying as a doctor is that I would have had to personally examine these people to be sure they were truly cured.
You saw it yourself.
I know what I saw. And I'm telling you to take that boy to someone who can really help him.
Well, all right, but... Well, I can get him to the Reverend Danforth quicker than I can get him to a doctor in Mankato. And if he says the Lord can't help, then we'll leave right away. I mean, a few more hours won't make no difference, will it?
They could.
Well, I believe in him. Maybe you don't have faith in the Lord's power, but I do. And I'm taking him to the Reverend first.
Things people do not to take a trip.
Isn't it like funny how he's just like, oh, what a drag. I've got to drive him into Mankato. Can't we just like do something quick?
Right. It's like, and it's going to rain, you know? So everybody's so excited. The show is going on again and again and again. He brings his boy that night and they're in the audience and you can see this kid is just noticeably, you know, having the worst cramps of all time.
I want to bring up the scene before when Caroline asks Albert and Laura, like, what, you're going again? They're like, oh, yeah, because it's fun, right?
Yeah, we want to see the magic, you know?
I think they, you know, they absolutely encapsulate. Is that the word I'm looking for? Who knows?
They're kind of embracing the magic of it all.
Yeah, like it's exciting. Fun. It's fun and exciting to go. It's, you know, it's a show.
I mean, I would probably be there as well. It's interesting. It's fun. It's a show.
And it's not like they have TV, so.
Yeah, this is kind of like TV.
Yeah, right?
Like, but yeah, here we are in the audience. Doc kind of pops in. Everybody's still interested. They're like, what is going on here?
God's sake. Please, please, Reverend, help my boy. Bring the child to me.
Leave me,
please help me skip this trip to Mankato.
It's a terrible pain in the stomach, Reverend.
It's his appendix. That's what it is. And it's about to burst if it hasn't already.
He don't know that for sure. He admitted he don't.
Stand the boy before me.
So this goes on for a while, and he draws out the pain. I'll play some of that and the music again.
Pain. Drawing out the pain.
And yeah, you pointed it out, like the dramatics of the music and the timing and all of this stuff. It's so interesting. So I'm going to play it through because it gets really, really dynamic and exciting. And then it's showmanship.
Drawing out the pain. Heal. Heal! Hold him. Hold him. Timothy.
I thought Timothy was dead at this point. I haven't seen this episode in a really long time. So. Timmy?
Thank you.
Now, if you listen really closely, right when the music stops, you hear it just go like this. It's gone. There's a little gas, buddy.
Glory be to God. Hallelujah. The Lord be praised. We thank you, Lord, for your love and mercy.
You know the movie A Christmas Story?
Yes.
It reminds me so much of that, certain parts of it. That are just so strange and out of nowhere, the music kind of comes. And it's, for some reason, the music really reminds me of Christmas music.
Oh, it's because, it's got those big...
Yeah, the bells. It's really the bells.
Those bells are the big, like if you've ever seen a symphony orchestra, that's the big rack of bells that's in the percussion section.
Yeah, I love the way they sound. They just... They're just like so, I guess, dynamic and really perfect. So basically, this is like Google coming into the Alta Vista headquarters back in like 1999, I'd say, maybe even earlier than that. So the two reverends meet at the Alta Vista headquarters.
Excuse me.
Reverend Danforth, come in.
We can visit some other time if you're busy.
No, not at all. Wednesday evening sermon. I'm afraid it's not going too well. Won't you sit down?
I'm sorry to hear that. Thank you.
Now, he seems so nice, doesn't he? I mean, he really just does. And this scene just makes you kind of like him even more at first.
I don't think I told you. I appreciate you're not having a prayer meeting on Wednesdays.
Well, that would be bad manners.
Created a great deal of excitement. I don't imagine that makes you anxious to move on.
That's true. Still, I do have a number of meetings scheduled in other towns.
I see.
But not for a little while, of course. And I do expect to be back.
Oh?
The truth is, that's why I've come to see you.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
I've spoken to Mrs. Olson about it, and she's very much in favor of it. You see, normally, in a few weeks, actually, I'd be turning my wagon south, what with the cold weather coming. Prayer meetings under a tent are not very attractive in a blizzard. Now, maybe it's advancing age, I'm not sure. But I don't want to go south anymore. In fact, I'd like to stay in Walnut Grove on a permanent basis. So I'm coming to you with a proposition. During the cold season, which is much longer in Minnesota than in most areas, I'd like to share this church with you on any basis you wish. We could even conduct joint services. Walnut Grove is quite central to the rural areas. I expect we develop a considerable following. In time, donations would increase to the point where we could build a larger facility.
Well, oh, God, here comes the megachurch.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, you could, you know, Alta Vista could be everywhere. It could rule the search engine world. But Reverend Alden doesn't seem too keen on having money, I guess, or having a successful gathering. But he does, actually.
Well, nor should he. I mean, no, that's one of the...
It's not what it's about.
I mean, priests, like one of their vows is poverty. Now I realize he's a reverend, but yeah. I mean, there is supposed to be this humbleness about it.
And there certainly is. I mean, he definitely walks the walk, I think, anyway.
Reverend Danforth, I find your proposition remarkable.
As I said, Mrs. Olson's very much in favor.
Yes, I'm sure she is.
Uh-oh, he's blinking.
Mrs. Olson is an outstanding member of this community. And although I haven't seen her present in this congregation lately, of this church. But Mrs. Olson alone does not make policy. I was appointed minister of this church by the community of Walnut Grove. I will remain as such as long as I am needed. I will not share this pulpit with you.
I see.
I'm glad you do.
And now the tables turn.
There doesn't seem much more to say.
No. I'm sorry.
Reverend Alden, there will now be a Wednesday evening prayer meeting. And one on Sunday morning as well.
Ouch. And the music. Actually, we should play a little bit of music right there as a reaction.
Uh-oh, double bass. Yeah. Things just got serious.
It's like a Hitchcock film right there. Holy cow. I mean, he's throwing it down, and Reverend turns and looks at his little, tiny little cross. It's not even shiny.
What do you say about the crosses, Mark?
The T, you know. No, but I mean, it's just one of these things where, you know, looking at it from a Christian standpoint, I guess it's a matter of him turning to God and wondering, is this a test, you know? And that's really what this is, it's a test of his faith in what he believes and what he stands for. And you know, we get that he gets tested quite a bit here. The next time that church is conducted, there are, like I said before, a total of 9 people in the church. 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10 if you count Reverend Alden. It's not good. And it's just obvious, like, what's going on, because the tent is still up, and we're just not really sure what's going on. So after church, Charles approaches the Reverend and Jonathan.
It's all right, Charles. There's nothing to say.
It's just not right.
Reverend Danford just doesn't have any business setting his services right opposite yours, Reverend.
I know. I appreciate your support.
Small as it is, you can count on it.
Thank you.
Dr. Baker.
It's kind of like a podcast, right?
Yeah.
It's like if people stop listening. It's like, look, we're just going to keep going on, all right? 9 listeners. Sounds like Walnut Grove Cast. No, I'm just kidding.
That's not true.
I know.
I'm wildly popular.
No, I'm kidding. I don't know about wildly, but I'm certainly blessed and fortunate to have the people who listen. I mean, you listen, all these wonderful people listen and send me wonderful, kind words. I get less and less hate mail every day.
No, that's good.
No, I don't get that much anymore. I used to get quite a bit, not so much anymore. All right, so... an emergency. I mean, he's like, I looked everywhere for you. I didn't think I thought they closed down this church. Comes running in.
Dr. Baker, my boy is awful sick.
Where is he?
Out of my buckboard.
Did I interrupt your church service? Oh, man. I'm laughing, but this is pretty much everyone's worst nightmare right here. Timothy's laying out on the wagon, and the entire congregation is out there, all 9 people. 11, 12 if you count the Timothy and his dad.
Getting ready for the prayer meeting when he said he felt funny and had to lay down. Just got weaker and weaker. He's going to be all right, ain't he, Doc?
Your boy is dead.
Dead? He can't be dead.
Now, I'm guessing that what really happened, maybe you get like a rush of adrenaline or something. Like,
yeah,
when
I was
going
to point that out, that I think that you're getting yelled at, which, yeah. I mean, that's like self-defense 101, yell and you'll get that adrenaline. But if you're getting yelled at, you're also getting adrenaline up, right? So, yeah, he probably had this rush of adrenaline that made him feel better temporarily.
Yeah.
And blocked the pain.
Plus, he's being told that he's being healed.
Yeah.
It worked for them.
People, and there's all these people believing it.
Yeah.
And again, when you get enough people all with the same energy in a room or on an airplane or, you know, in any sort of situation where there's, again, I want to say mass hysteria, which it kind of is. Like, I think it's like the talking in tongues and stuff. One mm-hmm. person kind of gets it going and then everybody else wants, you know, you don't want to be not touched by God, right? Like, you don't want to show that you're just like completely ignored by God.
Yeah.
Right. So
the power of belief is a very powerful thing. And
it is, it's very powerful. I mean, it's scary. Good in some ways and it's bad in some ways.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know,
but here we go. Timothy is scooped up by his dad and he walks across the street to the tent where they're, of course, having their service. And he walks right in.
Brother Dodds, what's happened?
My Timothy is dead.
May God be with you, brother.
You said he was healed.
It was God's will.
No, it wasn't.
This is like some 4D chess right here. This is a shyster. I mean, the way he turns this around is really, really, it's like a masterpiece of script writing right here. It's kind of amazing.
Well, you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of all the mega preachers who, whenever anybody says, you know, of course, I'm sure you know about the prosperity gospel and how a lot of these religions that's, you know, like, oh, if you just give us seed money, the seed money, it'll grow. And, you know, mm-hmm. they're really taking
like the 700 Club and stuff like that.
Yeah. And they're really taking advantage of people who don't have anything. They're just desperate. Right?
Yeah.
Like they are desperately trying for things to improve. Mm-hmm. So they're taking advantage and then they're flying around in their private jets. And then they always justify it. Well, God likes me and God, you know, this is what happens. And this is why you have to keep, you know, they can just, it's God's will.
Yeah, somebody's got to pay for those Jewish accountants.
Accountants.
I almost called them an accountant, an attorney. Whoops.
I would think they probably use Jewish attorneys too, because well,
probably
they can afford them.
Yeah.
But sorry.
I'm very offended.
Oh God.
An interesting little statistic, though. According to a 2004 Newsweek poll, 72% of Americans, not Canadians, said that they believe that praying to God can cure someone, even if science says the person has an incurable disease.
Wow.
72%. I mean, you know, I guess. Maybe it makes the moment easier to deal with. But I guess I'm a fatalist. I just believe if something's going to happen, it's going to happen.
Yeah, and
if you
again,
do nothing, then, you know, of course.
I keep saying again, God. I should drink every time I say it.
don't.
Was it you who I was saying this to? No, it was on another thing I was doing. And I was My dad was a firefighter
mm-hmm.
for 35 years. And I was an only child. I think I probably absorbed more than a kid with siblings would have because I was always around. You know, like I would know when my dad got called out in the middle of the night and I'd sneak out because my mom would get up and she'd make coffee. If my dad got called out, my mom would stay up all night, even if she had work the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I remember one of the grain elevators. I grew up in a relatively small city. It was like 30,000-40,000 people. So, and at the time, the firefighters dealt with the county also. So, I mean, my dad worked all the time. He got overtime. He got called out to every big call. I mean, I remember there was a grain elevator we could see from our house at one point that was on fire.
Holy cow.
And I knew, you know, the phone rang and my dad was going there and we were like watching it happen in front of our, you know.
Like from the distance, yeah.
Yeah. So growing up, I'm kind of fatalistic too and realistic in that, you know, I don't have any... It can't happen to me. I don't have that feeling about anything because I know that every day someone is having the absolute worst day of their life. Mm. That somebody somewhere is losing their life, losing a limb,
mm-hmm.
losing a baby, having their house, you know, obliterated in a car wreck that changes everything. And, you know, it doesn't matter what religion they are and where they come from or what they do, whether they're a good or a bad person, things happen all mm-hmm. the time
yeah.
for no good reason. So I'm pretty fatalistic too. Like it, you know, I just, I just know, I think you end up knowing too much when you've got a parent who does that for a living.
Yeah. But, you know, I think there's also a certain place for, with that kind of situation, maybe there's a place for faith as well, because, you know, when that person's being put into in such a dangerous situation, more than, you know, even, I think the word dangerous is, you know, is an understatement of some situations maybe your dad was in. And, you know, you have to have the faith that not only will he make the right choice, but, you know, maybe there's a higher power that will allow him to come back home, you know?
Certainly. And I mean, you know, there's a large chunk of the New York Fire Department that, you know, come from an Irish background, so definitely are Catholic, right?
Yeah.
And like a lot more hardcore Catholic than I've ever been. Yeah. You know, like I've, you know, the New York Fire Department is just a fascinating organism to discuss and to read about, because it is such a huge traditional department and with so many great stories.
Yeah. But so back in back with this shyster.
Yeah.
This Minnesota preacher. So basically he's going to turn it around and make it so that this isn't his fault. This is God's decision to have taken Timothy.
To withhold from him what is his. And if our Heavenly Father chose to take the life, the earthly life of this child and bestow on him a new life in his kingdom, then it was to save him. And God's wisdom will not be questioned, nor will he be mocked. To say that pain is not of the devil but of God is an abomination. Brother Dines, your grief for Timothy's loss is great. But do you know how much greater is Timothy's joy at this moment? For he is in heaven, where he was called by our Heavenly Father.
So he basically convinces the dad that it's all good, it's fine. You should be happy for Timothy.
And this is very powerful, because everybody sitting in that room, basically what he's saying is that if you don't believe this is what was right, then you don't have faith.
Right. You don't get it. But yeah. It's kind of like, this is you. Who do you think you are to question the will of God? I mean, it's a very powerful statement, but it's, you know, crazy.
This is always the great thing. When something bad happens, you know, it's always you can blame it. I mean, he's saying that, oh well, you know, you'll always hear people say like, oh well, God gave man free will, that's why bad things happen, that's why priests are, you know, raping little kids and things like that. But now when it's convenient, the narrative changes to, oh well, God took him. It was God's time to take him. And, you know, God knows how to make a right decision, right? Like, and stuff like that really burns me. Like,
it's dark. Yeah, it's really dark.
It's such a terrible thing to do to people, is to use their faith against them.
Now, what is also dark is this weird cemetery or graveyard. Well, what is different? A graveyard is in a church, right? And a cemetery is its own location.
I don't know that I've ever thought there's a difference.
Yeah, there is. My son actually told me about this. I'll confirm it in a little bit, but I'm pretty sure a graveyard is in a church. Or
I think that makes sense, because it would be in the churchyard, right? So it would actually be in the yard, whereas a cemetery is just for, like, it's a...
Like, it's a purpose. Designated area.
Yeah, designated area. Yeah.
So they're in this thing, which is right near a swing, and it's right kind of next to the school. I'm not sure if is this a reoccurring like location? I don't. And there seems to be about a dozen markers. So I'm not really sure what that's all about. It's very strange.
People in Little House either get buried here or they get buried on their own land.
Why get buried in town? Like it doesn't really make that much sense, but you know, all right, it's a TV show. Sometimes I guess I forget that it's just a TV show.
Yeah.
So Charles is in right now to church at school, and he's confronting Reverend Alden about what's going on. And Reverend Alden, we start seeing him getting a little afraid here. I really love him in this scene and how intense this gets.
Dabs Greer is brilliant in this. He's so good.
And Charles's hair is on point. It looked, it couldn't be messier and crazier than ever,
between a mullet and an afro. I can't.
It's just the best. It's the best.
Reverend, maybe we're not thinking right about Danforth. I mean, it was Timothy's father who wouldn't let him get the operation.
Charles, there's nothing more to talk about. Ouch. The people made their choice. They want Danforth. I'm not a healer.
You can say goodbye to that second piece of pie from now on. Talk to me that way. Jeez.
I don't know. Maybe I don't have enough faith. But I do know that I'll not stand by and watch my entire congregation follow another minister.
Well, it's just your pride.
Yes, God help me, yes! I'll go on Saturday. Reverend?
Couldn't you wait till Sunday? An awful lot of folks would like to give you a proper goodbye.
No. Goodbye, Charles.
Bye, Reverend.
It's really sad. You know, like, that's a really intense thing to be going through. It's like, how many weeks has it been?
Yeah, and I mean, a reverend like Reverend Alden would have, like, he does go to, does he go to Mankato or Sleepy Eye? I can't remember which. But, like, splits his time between two congregations. He's not the richest guy on earth. He's not, you know, he is a very humble servant of God.
Yeah.
So to have that taken away by
some
bravado,
shyster. Yeah.
Yeah, like some total complete shyster who, you know, is just not about the, not living really as a Christian by the standard of being like that humbleness, that feeling of service for people, right?
Yeah. So Reverend Danford gets into his Divine Church of Salvation mobile, and he heads out to, as he puts it, a few one-night stands to Sleepy Eye, I think. I think Sleepy Eye. Because that's where Charles was going. So, yes.
I think so, yeah.
Sleepy Eye. So he's going to be gone for a few days. He'll be back, and that'll be it. You know, he's now going to be a semi-permanent part of Walnut Grove. And I look forward to seeing him in more episodes. It's the end. It's over. No,
it's all done.
Nels is starting to give him the stink eye, though. He's starting to kind of, we're not really sure why. We're not 100% sure why all of a sudden Nels doesn't like him. But we get a little bit of that in here. Harriet is questioning some type of clerical error, and they have a little bit of a conversation about Reverend Danford.
Nels?
Yeah?
Did you put this on Jim Nielsen's account, sir?
I don't know, I suppose.
Well, what are you so down in the mouth about?
Harriet, I told a lie out there.
Oh, Nels, what are you talking about?
I am not looking forward to Reverend Danforth coming back.
Why, Nels Olson, what is the matter with you?
It's the way I feel.
Well, if you feel that way, then why did you vote for him?
Because you wanted him here. Because the town wanted him.
Well, of course they did. The man is obviously a hand of God. Well, he is. And he's going to make this town famous. And it certainly isn't going to hurt our business any. Well, people are going to come from miles around to be healed. And it was my idea to bring him here in the first place. And don't you forget it.
Harriet. Always thinking about the cash at the end of the...
I don't know if you noticed, but Harriet has a bit of a wardrobe malfunction.
What?
Yeah, if you look at her dress at the back, she's got a little, it's like the dress has gotten a bit too small for her.
Oh, I have to go back. I'll make it a note and take screenshots.
And I'm not trying to be mean to Harriet, because God knows I am no, I'm in no way to talk about, you know, being portly. But I just happened to know, because I was thinking as I was standing her, she was standing on like the deck, what was veranda. Deck sounds like such a Canadian word, an American show. Anyways, that I don't think the women in Little House on the Prairie were corseted. Like, I don't think they did.
Probably for the most of the time they were not.
No.
I mean, why would you want to go through that ever? But I mean,
there's a very popular show in Canada called Murdoch Mysteries. It's on its 14th season.
I've never heard of it.
And it's very steampunky. It's like right at the end of the, like right 1990s going into, or 1890s going into the 1900s.
Oh.
So, but yeah, all the actresses there do corset.
Oof.
And I'm a big fan of the corset, to be honest.
Oh, no, but I think it's a beautiful look. Like, you know, it really ties the outfit together. It's just a matter of, I feel for each person that is squeezing into one.
But I've been trying to figure out, like, if you were on the prairies, I mean, even Mrs. Olson, like, I guess she can get Nellie to tie it for her or Nels, but.
Yeah, I mean, if you tie your own corset, or you have some weak, some limp-armed kid who can't really tie a knot, or you get Nels, I guess.
Yeah, like, I don't really know how that would work in a place where. Like, where you have to, you know, it's tough, sweaty. I wouldn't want to wear a corset when I'm working in the field. So they must have done something. Like, they probably had underclothes, but I don't know that they would in the prairies. I should look that up. Anyways, once again, squirrel.
Yeah, squirrel. So Charles can't sleep. He talks to Caroline. He's all upset over Reverend Alden's thing. And the next day, Jonathan calls him out for it. People are constantly calling people out for things, but. Jonathan just says what's on his mind. See if he uses the word ain't. See if he can get through a sentence without saying ain't.
Charles, you don't look good at all. You sure you don't want me to drive this load into Sleepy Eye?
I'll be fine.
I'd be glad to do it, Charles.
Standing between the two of us, who's got the tougher job? You driving this load into Sleepy Eye, or you working on the next order all by yourself?
I was hoping you wouldn't think of that.
I did. I'll see you later.
He did. He didn't say ain't once. he loves saying it, though. Charles gets to Sleepy Eye. The bottom line is he sees the faith healer, and he sees the faith healer with his staff of fakers. The blind lady, the lady in a wheelchair, and the guy on crutches. The trifecta. And one guy, I don't even know why he's up there. I think he's just helping the blind. He's with the blind lady. So he's kind of amazed by this whole thing. And he goes up to one of the guys who's working. And he asks, he's like, I have to expose him. Which is essentially the where this whole episode is going to continue going. So,
where's the Reverend Danforth preaching next?
Meadows, just south of Downing, tomorrow at noon. If you know someone in need of healing, you should bring them.
I intend to.
That's a great line. That's like a badass superhero line right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Or like James Bond. Yeah, that's like a James Bond line.
Yeah, it's like, I intend to. We get the old man complaining, saying, there's going to be potholes, it's 30 miles, and we've seen this guy before. I don't know where we've seen him before.
Oh, I know when he was talking, when I was watching it, though, I was thinking, like, it would be so dark.
Oh, it's beyond dark. I mean, what other light is there? There's the moon.
Yeah.
That's it.
Like, it's hard to imagine in our modern world what it looked like when...
No headlights.
The night sky would have been amazing. Like, the stars would have been, like, it would have been unbelievable to what we're used to now.
But, you know, it's one of those things also where you wouldn't even think to look at the sky because that's just what it is all the time.
Yeah.
It's like the Statue of Liberty. You know, you just don't go to it if you're here. If you're in New York, the last thing you do is go to the Statue of Liberty. you go to the Statue of Liberty in the fourth grade. That's about it. So yeah, he's going to go 30 miles in the dark, right? Which is just nuts. It's a good point. To travel at night, I mean, that's really risky. He gets to Reverend Alden, and I don't know where Reverend Alden is. Do you know where he is in this little room?
Well, presumably it's at his house that he shares with his wife, right?
Is he married at this point?
Yeah, he is, because he says at the beginning.
I thought he did. Okay.
When Ellen's out of town. So I presume.
It looks like a room.
It looks like a room, but I think it was what he had for the set.
But yeah, he gets. He basically catches up to the Reverend and tells him the scheme.
Charles, are you sure? Are you sure it's the same ones?
Reverend, I'm positive. I just don't understand why. We know some of the people that he helped. If he can really heal, why does he use fakes?
Perhaps because he needs a convincing way to get the people to believe he can heal. Once he has the people, themselves will do the rest. Charles, the power of belief is incredible, whether it's truly from God or not. And there are authentic fake healers. I've seen their miracles.
Well, again,
just shut up. Let's kill him. Load the gun and let's go.
Exactly.
Get the
right.
The Danforth's not one of them.
Who are these people? These
I mean, Timothy would be alive today if it wasn't for him. Will you come with us?
Oh, no.
Why not?
Well, Charles, I don't want him to use me as an excuse. If I'm with you when you face him, he'll swear that I put you up to it because he took my church away from me. You've seen how he can move people. If I thought I'd help, I'd go.
All right, we'll go without you.
As usual. It's like, thanks a lot, useful.
Also, we'd have to take another wagon, and that's just...
Yeah. It's like, oh, and you're probably going to sing songs, and I probably won't be able to curse. So they catch up to the scam again, and we see the whole scam kind of happening all over again.
For his divine healing,
please God help me.
Help me, Lord.
I want to see again.
So this time, though, he brought Doc Baker, he brought Timothy's dad, who I can't remember his name. I think his last name is Dobbs, and he brought the Olsons. And Harriet's just like kind of in disbelief, I guess, because she's far too smart to fall for this type of scam.
Come forward.
That's it. Let's go.
The power and love of God are in you, in every fiber of your body.
So it's the whole scam. The whole scam is perfectly exactly what it was before. Her wheelchair is not like Nellie's wheelchair.
No.
It's like a chair. These must have weighed a ton.
Oh, they must have. Well, I think, remember, Charles fixes up the one for Nellie. He says he fixes it up.
Really? I don't remember that.
Yeah. Charles fixes up one for her while they order one. Because I think Doc Baker had an old one or something.
Now, Annie Quinn... She works at a museum. I think she works at a museum, or she's involved with a museum. And I could have sworn she posted a picture of a very similar wheelchair that was either donated or something like that. I have to ask how much that thing weighs, because imagine, you know, you don't have the use of your legs, and on top of it, you're in like a 50-pound wheelchair. You know, it's crazy.
That's, yeah, like, I would think they probably were made of cast iron or...
hardwood, at least.
Or something, yeah. If you're hearing, like, farting noises in the background, that's my son blowing up a balloon and letting it go, so...
Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Exactly. Just so you know. Or maybe it's me, you'll never know.
Wait, what's your son's first name?
Simon.
Simon?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Simon. Why did I not know it was Simon? I must have known it was Simon. I'm terrible with names.
Yeah, me too. It's all good. Who are you again?
Oh. My name is Charles. So here we go. They're going to confront him. They're like, we're sick of this. We're going to confront you.
Oh, thank you, God. You killed my son. Killed my Timothy.
Why do you interrupt these holy proceedings? I know you not.
He's like talking like Yoda there, by the way. I know you not. Dude, what's up with this backwards talk all of a sudden?
Don't you know me, Reverend?
Sounds more official.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you don't know me.
Punch him, Charles.
Don't remember me. You remember those people?
Harriet's giving him the real stink eye. It's like, you better say you know me, sir. Reverend.
Why, yes, of course I do. You see, the Reverend Danforth did more than just kill that little boy. Much more. He let him die of a ruptured appendix because he convinced that man, the boy's father, that he had cured him.
You know that is not true.
I saw that woman cured in Walnut Grove.
Now, I remember this episode from when I was younger, and I remember it so well because this is, to me anyway, the most intense Pa that there is in all 9 seasons.
If you count his movies. Like, he is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is really, really, this is like Houdini when he was, like, debunking mediums. Like, this is crazy.
This makes me think of when James Randi, did this to Peter Popoff,
mm-hmm.
and
he's done it to everyone. He just passed away.
Yeah,
I love James Randi. Yeah.
Oh, amazing, right? Like, it was just everything in his story, and you know, he was just a very cool human.
One of a kind. Yeah.
Yeah, very one of a kind. But yeah, I mean, he used a radio transmitter to find Margaret Popoff, the wife. Peter Popoff. What a ridiculous name, Peter Popoff. Anyways.
But people should look up James Randi. I'll put a link to it in the show note. I mean, his whole thing was how I think he had a standing offer of $1 million to anybody who could present evidence of the supernatural or the paranormal. Basically, you would have to take his test.
That's correct. And when the people that were sort of like, that, you know, felt they had the most to lose from him saying things like this, took him to task on it.
Yeah.
He actually was able to provide that, yes, indeed, he did have it. They would say, like, oh, well, that's easy to say because you don't actually have it. And he provided proof.
And he would just magically not, I mean, the people would magically not be able to present the evidence when the test was given.
Yes, correct.
But definitely amazing, amazing person. There's a ton of stuff on YouTube for him. But, all right, here we go. So I'm going to play this uninterrupted because I just think it's totally worth it and it's so intense.
And again last night and Sleepy Eye and again today. Is that true? Answer me!
It's true.
Yes, we saw it.
Give me your crutches, brother. You don't need them. It's a miracle! He can stand! Or have I healed him, Reverend? And shouldn't we ask this poor blind woman how many times the Reverend has restored her sight?
Please.
Tell them how many!
No. No.
He raises the crutch to her and she just flinches. I was like, oh, wow, this is like the... How'd you see that? It's awesome.
Yeah, she saw the crutch.
That was a little attitude-y there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, all
she
of a sudden...
saw the crutch.
Yeah. It's a miracle.
Maybe you'd like to explain this to your congregation, Reverend. Maybe you'd like to explain to them how surely God has called you to lie and deceive them in his name.
He's a fake. Let's go.
What I've done for the Lord. And for you, for all of you, you lacked the faith to be healed. I had to give you that faith. That's why I used these people, to make you strong, to make you believe. Don't you understand that?
I understand you lied.
I lied to fool the devil to help you save yourselves.
And so it's just like pathetic and like, oh man, you are a fraud, but you know, he just has to go to another town where they don't know him and start all over again, I would imagine.
Exactly. And I mean, exactly like James Randi, even though he exposed Peter Popoff, Peter Popoff kept doing it, right?
Yeah. All of them. Well, I mean, there were so many.
Jim Baker's still on TV.
Yeah. And his son.
Have you seen Jim Baker? He looks like so different than I remember him in the 80s. Like, he's bald. He looks like a... it's very weird.
Yeah, he... You know, it's weird. My whole focus on those people, you know, and these kind of the big families, is that it all started out with their hearts in the right place. And it's just they got corrupted with the money and the power. And you know, Jim Baker, of course, being the founder, I guess, of PTL and the 700 Club. 700 Club, you know how you join the 700 Club, right? Do you know that?
No, I don't know.
You donated $700.
Oh.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. And PTL stands for Praise the Lord.
I think I knew that, and I think I've heard that before.
Yeah, and these are all the organizations I was kind of surrounded by. But, you know, it's I do genuinely believe that they started out with good intentions. And maybe they even still carried on good intentions. Maybe they still do some good. But the money and the power has definitely corrupted it on so many levels.
I think that happens in a lot of cases. Like we see this with like superstars, you know, like
politics too. It's crazy. We
live in... You ever see a movie called Dave?
You know, I know of it. I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's great. It's Kevin Kline, and he's like he works at a...
Is he a politician or something?
No, he's just a nice guy. He's this nice guy that works at an agency that tries to get people jobs. Like he's, you know, he's this decent guy. But he looks like the current serving president of the United States.
Yeah.
And they get him, the Secret Service shows up one day to get him to be a lookalike. Mm-hmm. Basically so the president can go bang his secretary. And while the president is banging his secretary, he has a heart attack. And so they keep Dave in because they don't want to panic everybody with the president having this heart attack.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening is that Dave kind of like starts running the government, like, you know, like he's sitting
the way
in
Dave would.
Well, he's running the government like, you know, he's like, so he was trying to find money in a budget to make something work. And he brings in a buddy of his who's an accountant. And so they go through all this, and then they're sitting down, and he's like, I think we can get rid of this program. And it was a program that he's like, so you're telling me we're paying however many million dollars so that we can assure people that they still like the car that they bought and they're still happy with it.
Right. looking at all of these crazy
foundations
and stuff.
Yeah, looking at it from just like a normal perspective of like someone who just has to make a budget every month. And it's actually one of my favorite movies because I think it is for anybody who's involved in politics, a bit of a political fairy tale, right? Because power does corrupt and money does corrupt. And we know that. And, you know, here's this totally, you know, uncorrupted individual who just kind of gets, boom, put in that place.
Yeah.
Who hasn't gone through the years of grooming and all the stuff that we know that happens in every party everywhere.
But speaking of uncorrupted and kind of waiting it out and hoping that something good will happen, Reverend Alden returns to the pulpit the following Sunday, or maybe Wednesday night, probably Sunday, and the church is packed. It's like we've never seen so many people. Standing room only. It's like the beginning of PTL. So here he is, and he's very happy. You can just see he's his faith is restored in his congregation.
During my years in divinity school and after, it was a dream of mine to be a great orator of God, holding a vast congregation spellbound in some great cathedral. For years, I was not to be. gradually I learned to accept the fact that God had placed me on this earth as a simple preacher.
Here. In this dusty little sleepy town. With you dirty, dusty people. On a pulpit that smells like an outhouse. All right, I'll stop now.
When Reverend Danforth came and took my church from me, I was hurt. I was envious. I was filled with envy for one who could command a congregation the way I dreamed of doing and couldn't. I was guilty of the sin of pride. Then, even as I learned that I was to come back to this pulpit, I thought I must do so as the fiery, commanding minister of God that I'd always dreamed of being, if you were to want me or need me, even love me. And then I realized my folly. Is it the duty of a minister to be wanted and loved? Or is it simply to love the Lord?
And everybody's just moved. They're all happy. Hey, there's Almanzo again sitting next to you.
Yeah, I saw that it's back.
Why did they get top billing, though? They didn't have one line. Neither
weird,
one.
Weird, right? I wonder if there were cut scenes.
Oh, yeah. There had to have been, right? Because, you know, when in the beginning, when he heals the woman in the wheelchair and she finally gets up, he's the first one to stand. Or one of the first, anyway. You can't really tell because he's so darn tall. So, yeah, I mean, it's really just nice that they're finally back. And the entire, I guess, congregation is healed. And we get a nice little voiceover from Beth.
Reynald and Amanda.
Whoops. I jumped that a little bit.
Reverend Alden remained our pastor. His courage to admit that a simple man, a shy man, dreaming of being what he wasn't, only strengthened our love and respect for him.
Ah, wonderful.
It is wonderful. I mean, I think there is a certain strength in infallibility, you know?
Yeah. I like this episode a lot. I think this is a great episode to kind of show somebody how the show can be religious without being too heavy-handed like they were in season one. This kind of steps away from the whole Jesus thing. You know? And it's really just about faith and also community. And I don't know. I really enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, I think it's just it was a solid, solid episode.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting Walnut Grovecast by heading over to patreon.com/walnutgrovecast. Any support is appreciated.